right, now it's time for Oh, the Humanities, taking a look at humanities scholarship research and events on campus and beyond. Joined in the studio, as always, by Max Orr, who heads up Carolina Public Humanities. Humanities.unc.edu is the website for more information on upcoming events. Getting into the winter break time right now, but a lot of humanities-related discussion on campus, so no shortage of things to talk about.
Indeed.
Max, thanks for being with us today.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure, Aaron. It's, you know, one of the things about the humanities is that they relate to the human condition. So if humans are involved in it, we probably have the humanities. But you're absolutely right, especially history is in particularly coming to the fore as a, what we might say, it's a current event is history. And as I always bring you something related to today's date, and I'm going to tie it very directly to what's going on in the UNC's campus. In 1872, a gentleman by the name of PBS Pinchback became the first African-American governor in the United States history, served as governor of Louisiana for 6 months. This was an interim position. He was also then elected to the U.S. Senate, but never served due to the Democratic Party of Louisiana's contesting of the elections. Eventually, as we can predict, the South became really an untenable space for African Americans, especially powerful ones like PBS Pinchback, influential ones. He eventually ended up settling in Washington, D.C. The reason I bring this up is because, of course, when we look at someone like the story of Governor Pinchback, we think about maybe a hopeful moment after the U.S. Civil War during the period of Reconstruction where we might have had institutional change and might have had cultural change if we hadn't have rolled back all of the advances that occurred after the Civil War with the end of the Reconstruction period and the beginning of the Jim Crow South. And as you know, on our campus at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, we have been just immersed in the past, in the present, with the Silent Sam controversy. And one of the most strident voices for justice in this particular issue has been Professor of History William Sturkey. You might remember William was here with us back in August, where he was teaching the course on race and memory at UNC, which a very popular course was open to the public, which really took on these issues head on. He's also the author of Hattiesburg, An American City in Black and White. And he is, of course, continuing to raise the alarm in a great way. So, William Sturkey, welcome to Oh, the Humanities.
Thank you for being with us today.
Thanks so much for having me again, guys.
Well, you know, I guess we could start by just talking about this settlement. And let me just ask you to sort of, you know, there's a particular things that you find most egregious about this settlement of $2.5 million?
$2.5 million, yeah.
Well, there are a number of different things, and I think a lot of attorneys would take issue with the process of the settlement. You know, we know very little. Our motto at UNC Chapel Hill is light and liberty. And, you know, no one's answering any questions. They released a frequently asked questions guide along with answers, but no one's answering any questions, not on the Board of Governors, not the Chancellor, not South Building. It's all under the cloak of darkness here. So light and liberty has been thrown out the window for this settlement, and we'll see what happens. But I think for me, from the perspective of a faculty member, what is so striking is this amount of money being given to an organization to study history in a particular way, and we get told no all the time. No, we can't afford to keep doing the Black History Month lecture. No, we can't afford a historian of slavery. No, we can't afford this as we try to study the university's past. And so to then turn around and give this organization $2.5 million, it's just really striking.
It's amazing to me, too, especially when we talk about the humanities. I think a lot of people get confused about history and how it works. You know, it is true that history helps us with narratives. History is something that's done in the present, right? We do it in the present. We look at the past and come up with our narratives. But it doesn't mean your truth is my truth, is everyone else's truth. There are objective facts. And there are objective facts to how and when these commemorations of the Jim Crow South and of white supremacy went up. And to give money to someone, to an organization that has completely flipped the factual basis upon how we've, you know, built our own understanding of the American South seems absolutely against the academic mission.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think a lot of people still sort of conflate history with the past. The past is everything that happened before now. History is the way that we interpret that past. History looks different depending on your perspective. And so an organization like the Sons of Confederate Veterans has been working since the 1890s to essentially push this lost cause narrative that hasn't changed really at all since they began over 100 years ago. So what have we had since then? We've had World War II, which showed the world that, you know, racism was incredibly dangerous and destructive. We've had the civil rights movement in this country that paved the way for black and brown students to attend the University of North Carolina. Even against all this, their views have not changed since the 1890s. The only thing that has changed is that after the civil rights movement, they've now incorporated the myth of the black Confederate soldier into more of their lexicon in order to deflect any accusations that they might be a white supremacist organization, which of course they're still often accused of, but their view has not changed. They're still touting the same old myths that their great-grandparents were touting in the 1890s.
There's two very interesting stories that I think need to be told in order to understand all of this. One, as you mentioned, is the history of the lost cause narrative and what it was and how it developed. And the other one is how it got to be as prominent as it did in the early 20th century, which is right around the time and as a direct consequence and a catalyst for all of these monuments going up, not to mention laws being passed and the rise of the Klan and popular culture and all of this. So enlighten us about that portion of American history, because I think that's really significant here.
Sure, and then I'd be happy to offer one concrete example of the way that they distort history now. So, I mean, you know, this organization was founded in the 1890s along with the United Daughters of the Confederacy, and much of what they were to do, their goal was to basically explain this new Jim Crow system, why they needed white supremacy, and in order to excuse and justify that, they turned to the Civil War and to the Old South. And so they constantly said that the war was not about slavery, this was not a system of white supremacy, that there were people that had great relationships with their enslaved people, that there weren't all that many enslaved people in the first place, and that basically everything that was happening to this new era of the South, this Jim Crow South, was all justified because of the history of the lost cause of Reconstruction, that African Americans couldn't handle themselves during Reconstruction, and so that they needed all these segregation laws, all the laws in the society that the civil rights movement ultimately tore down. So that's when all of this sort of really emerged in the 1890s into the 1910s, and of course that's when Silent Sam was put up. The one just concrete example that I'll use is that they really downplay the centrality of slavery to anything. So they, of course, they admit that some people in the South had slaves, but they certainly don't say that that was the cause of the Civil War. Rather, it was some sort of generic issue over states' rights, which, you know, has been completely discredited in professional historian circles. But with Silent Sam, this organization now can continue to downplay slavery in a way that's just factually wrong. So we know that most of the soldiers who left UNC to fight in the Civil War came from slave-owning families. The class of 1860 at UNC, the average family that a student came from, on average, they owned 26 slaves. And if you just think about it, it makes perfect sense. Who was attending elite Southern schools in 1860? There was no GI Bill. But that basic fact, and that's just a fact, that's not necessarily, that's part of history, but you can look that up on Ancestry.com. I could find that for you in 5 minutes. But that will not be included in their context, in their display with Silent Sam, because that runs counterintuitive to their historical mission to promote the lost cause and advocate for those members of the Old South who tore this country apart.
You know, I think it's really interesting about that time period that you mentioned, the 1890s and, you know, up through 1913 in this time, is that it is also this great era of, among the white population, reconciliation between the white and the South. It's finally, we're gonna put the Civil War behind us. And you see these, you know, the famous pictures of veterans from the two different sides meeting on the field at Gettysburg and shaking hands and whatnot. So I think there's something that is unfortunate in the way that these have been put up as symbols of conciliation, when in fact they are just the opposite. They're still poking the button of white supremacy, and I feel like it's finally an awakening among the white students on this campus to realize that they're part of this have to come to terms with how you can't, I use the word whitewashing, how this whole attempt was to whitewash. What was really going on was white people got together around people like Woodrow Wilson and embraced white supremacy in the North and in the South at this time in the 1910s. And so I hope that that's also part of the issue. We can't just call this a Southern problem.
Absolutely. And I want to add one thing to what you said, and that's that part of what they wanted to do was make sure there was this racial divide between poor white people and poor black people. Mm-hmm. So especially in a state like North Carolina, which had this fusion government for a brief period of time of that included poor white people and poor black people, these monuments and these campaigns of the lost cause and of white supremacy were meant to make sure that those parties did not align politically. And one of the most stunning things to me as a historian in 2019 is how those monuments still work to do that. Even though we've gotten rid of the, you know, the old Jim Crow signs, like the water fountain signs and the bus segregation signs, we still have Confederate monuments dividing people in the state. So it's not really rational that we fight so hard over Silent Sam, for example. It's just not. It's a cancer on the campus. It costs over $500,000 a year to keep it up. But it really benefits people politically who don't want some folks to worry about their health care or their education and then to be all, you know, whipped up in a tizzy about whether or not the Confederate monument stands. And it still works to divide the races today. And that is a remarkable tragedy to me.
You're both in the history department. What is, I mean, we've gotten the statement from the UNC Faculty Council. We got the statement from the community, the Campus Safety Commission denouncing the deal. We've heard the statement from Chancellor Guskowitz. What just in general is the reaction among faculty members and among students to what's been going on just in the last 2 weeks?
Well, we're seeing a lot of, you know, internal responses, and I predict very soon you'll see the public response from the history department based on some of the internal emails, but I don't want to jump the gun on that until the department meets to discuss it. But absolutely, the history department is in arms, almost unanimous from what I can tell on emails about the responsibility we have to tell the truth when we do our historical research.
I mean, just to put this into perspective, you know, Chancellor Guskowitz studies concussions. This is the equivalent of giving $2.5 million to an organization that denies that football causes concussions. I mean, it's just absolutely incredulous to give this amount of money to this organization that's just not credited anywhere in any real serious historical circles.
We haven't mentioned this yet, but you just wrote an editorial in the New York Times, which I've got pulled up, and one of the paragraphs from it says, "This is the clear endorsement of a discredited and dangerous idea. The Confederacy groups are not purveyors of truth. They're promoting a narrative that pollutes contemporary American historical memory and bolsters modern-day white supremacists." That's the level of the reaction against the agreement that we're seeing, not just from you in the history department, but from the faculty, from the students, from people in the Chapel Hill community. What's next? What happens next as a result of this? What's the next step?
Well, I think that the leadership of the university and the system kind of expected this to be swept under the rug. Obviously, the timing of it, you know, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving at 4 p.m. And I just can't imagine that they really thought people were not going to notice this. But in any event, people are going to ask folks to be held accountable. We need some real answers here about how this whole deal went down and about what's going to then happen on the campus that is an appropriate response to giving $2.5 million to people, to an organization that for years has worked to tear apart different groups in American history, especially white and black. And so what can we do to then counterbalance that? Because that's what we've been doing in academia for decades now, and this just seems like an enormous step backward.
You know, I would say from my perspective, it really is a challenge for the humanities. We started off talking about, you know, humanities are always sort of considered a little soft. You know, it's a matter of your own values and your beliefs that help you interpret the various pieces of literature that you're coming across or historical information that you're coming across. But there is rigor in the humanities. And I find that this, again, going back to this, you wouldn't give, Lloyd Kramer, our dear friend, mentioned, you know, you wouldn't give $2.5 million to a Flat Earth Society. Because that's fact, you know, and we don't deal with conspiracy theory as history. We deal with real researched history, and that, to me, is the most unfortunate thing. And the humanities have to find the resources to say, actually, we are aiming to find a truth with a capital T, and at the same time wanting to be respectful of people's values and the way that they interpret history. I find myself somewhat challenged to be able to put those two things together. But, you know, my own values and my own beliefs say, no, the truth matters first. And that's, we do know that these have an actual history of why these monuments were put up, mm-hmm. that we can analyze. And there are, it's not the narrative that we're getting from the people who received this money.
We've got to start wrapping up. William, final thoughts. What should people take away primarily?
I mean, I think the fundamentally the biggest issue here is with the way that the system leadership has been appointed and how they operate. These are political appointees, they're former state legislators, they're donors to campaigns, and they're just not able to really see this thing that clearly with 360-degree view. I think a lot of them simply want to burn the libs, to use a popular phrase. And ultimately what that's going to simply do is hurt the university, hurt the state. You know, it's not something that's a really good use of our time and or our resources, and it's just going to tarnish our reputation even further. I think that we need leaders who are interested in serving and not just controlling. We're not just interested in punishing people. We need people that are really interested in serving the public of the state. Those are the types of leaders we need on these boards.
Max?
Well, I agree 100%. Mm-hmm. You know, what I will say is we'll be doing our part in Carolina Public Humanities to having open forums about all of the issues that we're talking about. That's our job, is to encourage public discussion, but not to skirt away from the truth. And we'll be doing our part over the next year.
William's editorial is called Why Did UNC Give Millions to a Neo-Confederate Group? That's available at nytimes.com. The book is Hattiesburg. That's out recently. You can check that out as well. Max, other things that people ought to know? Or?
Well, we have no more events in the calendar year 2019. We're really looking forward to a great calendar year 2020. And I will say one of our very first events will be a screening of Wilmington on Fire, which talks mm-hmm. very much about the failed, the destruction of an attempt to do just what you were talking about, poor whites and poor blacks coming together and finding political agency in Wilmington in 1898 and how that was crushed by a coup d'etat. That's our first program. So I guess we'll be starting right out with this in January.
Humanities.unc.edu for more information. Max Orr, William Sturkey, thank you so much.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you.